Thank God for the day we wrote, in God we trust on our dollars.
I am mindful that we're all sinners. I believe in the sanctity of marriage.
Our marriage act is written somewhat oddly. It's written with the assumption that only a man and a woman could ever fall in love together.
I fell in love with somebody that lives in a different country, and we are both together fighting for the rights of staying together, being gay and being free.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Anti-marriage edicts are preached at the Vatican and the White House. New Zealand MP Tim Barnett explains his civil unions plan, and the U.S. Senate is introduced to immigration equality. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 2nd, 2003. Legal recognition of gay and lesbian couples came under fire this week from two of the world's greatest powers, the Vatican and U.S. President George Bush. The Vatican officially published in seven languages a previously leaked 12-page document called Considerations Regarding Proposals to Give Legal Recognition to Unions Between Homosexual Persons. That's been called its strongest statement on any subject in decades. It particularly targets politicians of the Roman Catholic faith, saying they have a moral duty to oppose any legislation recognizing gay and lesbian partners. It declares marriage is holy while homosexual acts go against the natural moral law. There are absolutely no grounds for considering homosexual unions to be in any way similar or even remotely analogous to God's plan for marriage and family. To vote in favor of a law so harmful to the common good is gravely immoral. Those who would move from tolerance to legitimization of specific rights for cohabiting homosexual persons need to be reminded that the approval or legalization of evil is something far different from the toleration of evil. It also says that allowing children to be adopted by gay and lesbian couples would actually mean doing violence to these children in the sense that their condition of dependency would be used to place them in an environment that is not conducive to their full human development. Indeed, the language of the document is so strong that the Irish Council for Civil Liberties warned that its distribution could lead to prosecution under Ireland's law against incitement to hatred, which provides for up to 6 months in jail.
But Catholic bishops in several countries, including Scotland, the Philippines, and the Pope's native Poland, were quick to join the campaign. Particularly vocal were some Canadian bishops, including Calgary's Fred Henry, who warned that Prime Minister Jean Chrétien, a Catholic, is jeopardizing his eternal salvation with his move to open the national definition of marriage to include gay and lesbian couples. Ottawa Archbishop Marcel Gervais has also both publicly and privately chastised Chrétien over the marriage bill, but Chrétien has previously emphasized that Canada has a division between church and state. The head of the Catholic Bishops' Conference in the province of Ontario, Bishop Jean-Louis Plouffe, took aim at Chrétien's likely successor, Paul Martin, who's well known as a devout Catholic, saying, "I would expect a Catholic politician would not push away his Catholic convictions because he's a politician," suggesting the alternative would be to be totally schizophrenic. Martin responded that as a lawmaker, he must take in a wider perspective than his own faith. Canada's National Conference of Catholic Bishops decided this week to seek to argue against the government's marriage bill before the Canadian Supreme Court, which is currently reviewing a draft at the government's request. A review of European press reactions by Germany's Deutsche Welle found editorial opinion and op-eds largely critical of the Vatican stance.
Of course, gays and lesbians around the world howled in protest, including those who are Catholics and those who are elected officials. Openly gay Irish Senator David Norris expressed fear that what he called a hate-filled message would lead to discrimination and violence and said the Vatican should be ashamed. Openly gay Australian Senator Brian Gregg called the Vatican document an appalling interference by the church into domestic politics and an abuse of power. However, Australia's Deputy Prime Minister, John Anderson, said the national government agrees with the Vatican's opposition to recognising gay and lesbian couples. Openly gay German MP Volker Beck described the publication as a sad document of narrow-minded fanaticism. Chris Carter, a gay Catholic who was New Zealand's first openly gay MP, was incredulous that the church wasn't concentrating on more significant issues such as poverty, child abuse, and violence. Italy's openly gay MP and longtime activist Franco Grillini shrugged off the church document as just the latest move in their homophobic crusade. The head of the Czech Republic's activist group Czech Gay Initiative, Jerry Fromada, was one of many who suggested the church's attack on gays might be a distraction from the Vatican's own scandals of priests abusing children. One Brazilian gay activist group, GGB, promised a campaign of protest letters against Catholic dioceses.
Separate from the Vatican attack, U.S. President George W. Bush this week chose to take a stand for legislation to specifically prevent legal same-gender marriages, something he'd indicated just a few weeks earlier was premature. At a press conference, he was asked, "Many of your supporters believe that homosexuality is immoral. They believe that it's been given too much acceptance in policy terms and culturally. As someone who's spoken out in strongly moral terms, what's your view on homosexuality?" The president responded,
I am mindful that we're all sinners. And I caution those who may try to take the speck out of their neighbor's eye when they got a log in their own. I think it's very important for our society to respect each individual, to welcome those with good hearts, to be a welcoming country. On the other hand, that does not mean that somebody like me needs to compromise on an issue such as marriage. And that's really where the issue is headed here in Washington, and that is the definition of marriage. I believe in the sanctity of marriage. I believe a marriage is between a man and a woman, and I think we ought to codify that one way. We've got lawyers looking at the best way to do that.
There's little doubt that the president's statements represent an effort to appease religious conservatives in his Republican Party and to create a wedge issue for next year's elections.
The party's Senate Republican Policy Committee, a group that researches issues toward developing legislative strategies, this week issued a policy paper entitled "The Threat to Marriage from the Courts." That paper emphasizes an amendment to the U.S. Constitution as the only way to stop the courts from legalizing gay and lesbian marriages. Such an amendment has already been introduced in the Congress for the second time, and support for it is growing since the U.S. Supreme Court struck down state sodomy laws in June. At the end of June, Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist spoke strongly in support of that amendment, but the president indicated that it was too soon and unnecessary.
Senate Minority Leader Tom Daschle still believes that the Federal Defense of Marriage Act is adequate. That 1996 measure, signed into law in the dead of night by Democratic President Bill Clinton, both prohibits any federal recognition of gay and lesbian couples and allows the states to refuse to recognize any gay or lesbian marriage another state may someday perform.
But a Senate Judiciary Subcommittee will start next month reviewing the Defense of Marriage Act to take care to do whatever it takes to ensure that the principles defined there remain the law of the land, in the words of Republican Senator John Cornyn of Texas.
Openly gay Democratic Congressmember Barney Frank denounced the president's statement as a political ploy. He said, "With President Bush's popularity dropping and the serious problems confronting America worsening, the administration seeks to divert attention by demagoguing on the issue of same-sex unions."
At least 15,000 people marched for Pride this week in London's 31st Pink Parade, and more than 60,000 attended the subsequent Party in the Park, despite rainy weather. Leading the procession were about 80 members of the Metropolitan Police Authority's Gay Police Association, half of them wearing full uniforms in this first year that that's been allowed. At least one officer on duty for the event threw them a salute from the sidelines.
In New York City, the Harvey Milk High School, a program for lesbian, gay, and trans youth to receive their education without fear of harassment and violence that was set up in 1984 by the Hetrick Martin Institute, will open this year for about 100 students as a freestanding school with city funding. The move has sparked a variety of criticism, from religious conservatives who are planning a lawsuit, from the principals' union demanding it should be open to all potentially victimized students, and from various individuals who don't believe that segregation is the answer to the problem of school harassment. But city officials, including the mayor and city council members, are proudly defending the school, whose upgrade was developed under New York's previous administration.
And finally, August 1st was a little-noticed landmark in European history. As Armenia's revised criminal code went into effect that day, the European political sphere was free of laws criminalizing private, non-commercial, homosexual acts between consenting adults for the first time in perhaps 1,500 years. The European section of ILGA, the International Lesbian and Gay Association, which worked hard to reach this goal, dates the continent's sodomy laws back to the legal code established by the Byzantine Emperor Justinian in the 6th century. While repeal began 200 years ago with the Napoleonic Code, in 1950, two-thirds of today's 48 European countries still criminalized homosexual acts. ILGA Europe Executive Director Ailsa Spindler said, "This is an important milestone in the achievement of LGBT rights in Europe, but it is just the beginning." A number of countries, Albania, Bulgaria, Greece, Ireland, Portugal, Serbia-Montenegro, and the United Kingdom, still have discriminatory provisions in the criminal law. 33 European countries provide no legal recognition whatsoever for same-sex partners. And of course, legal equality is itself only one element in the fight against discrimination.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 2, 2003. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Among the huddled masses yearning to breathe free, Lady Liberty has yet to smile on those in committed relationships with gay and lesbian U.S. citizens. You'll hear more about the Permanent Partners Immigration Act after a civil conversation about partner rights in New Zealand. New Zealand's government in July announced its intention to introduce a bill to create civil unions open to same-gender and unmarried heterosexual couples, with all the rights and responsibilities of marriage. The bill would amend more than 100 laws, and it's been drafted for the Labour Party by openly gay Member of Parliament Tim Barnett. In Wellington, Jim Waters and Hugh Young managed to chat briefly with Barnett by cell phone about his civil unions proposal during a break in the MP's parliamentary schedule.
What we're proposing is to introduce civil union, which is a parallel system to marriage, but offering all the same rights as marriage, and open to same-sex couples and different-sex couples. So it's parallel, but the same rights are there, which is a crucial thing.
The Canadian Act seems to go much further than ours and actually call it marriage. In fact, they seem to have just made their Marriage Act gender neutral. Are you just bending to the pressure from the Conservatives not to do that?
Well, because Canadians are bending to the pressure from the Supreme Court, which tells them they have to do it, whereas we don't have a court of final appeal with the same power to tell the government or tell Parliament they have to do things. Personally, I think there are grounds for amending marriage separately. I think there are grounds for saying that marriage should be looked at and should be some reform around marriage for everyone. And I think ideally, as part of that, you'd actually be looking at same-sex relationships, but we deal with fiscal realities. And we also deal with the fact that people in our community, in large part, are nervous about marriage. I think marriage has a number of negatives attached to it, which they wouldn't want to see replicated. So I think what we're doing is a classic compromise. We're saying, let's keep marriage as it is, don't touch it, and we're going to create a separate institution, and that's an important thing to do. The opposition to it will come from some in our community who want marriage and nothing else, and they, unfortunately for them, are going to be lined up together with fundamentalist Christians who will say, let's vote against the current bill and just do nothing, because I think the status quo is fine. Well, our relationships are unprotected. So it's going to be quite a complicated debate.
You will have seen, of course, the coverage in the Dominion Post, in which one of the activists, a lesbian couple, were quoted as saying it's a cop-out in relation to the proposal as it is now. So obviously there's some opposition within the community motivating already.
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends on whether people say we think this is good but not enough. I mean, we are a country that goes through reform in an incremental way. We didn't get an equal age of consent for homosexual relationships and human rights protection at the same time. You take things bit by bit as you can achieve them.
How is the sort of gatekeeping for the civil union done? Do you presumably go through some sort of ceremony before some sort of civil person, do you? What's the arrangement?
Well, there's two processes. Essentially, marriage, they form a registration of a relationship, and so civil union. Now, whether the denominations want to create a service around that registration process is entirely up to them.
There seems to be a degree of politics about how this bill is going to be put through. It's now a Labour bill, but it is going to be a conscience vote. How does that work?
The same happened with the National Government in 1998, where they proposed a reduction in the drinking age, but they made it a conscience vote. So it's where a government wants an issue to be decided on, but also respect for some people in its own ranks and other parties may not want to support it for conscience or religious or moral reasons. It allows individuals to make up their own minds. Now, the reason why that's a good thing politically is it enables people to pass like ACT and National, who might well want to support civil union, to go ahead and do that. Because if Labour came out saying this is our bill and we will all vote for it, then I suspect National came out against it. So from a political point of view, you actually, by having a conscience vote, make sure there's a coalition of people from across the spectrum who are all supporting it.
People are going from America to Canada to get married. Do you think people will start coming here to get married or to get civil united?
It depends on whether our marriage... And I think our marriage law currently allows anyone to come here and get married. And if we replicate that, it means that indeed people in same-sex relationships would be able to come here and marry, even if neither of them were New Zealanders. Whereas in other countries, marriage is traditionally has to involve somebody from that country, and that's the way they've produced their civil union legislation. So my understanding is the marriage laws here are pretty loose compared to other countries. They're not even that clear about the gender of the people involved. Our marriage act is written somewhat oddly. It's written with the assumption that only a man and a woman could ever fall in love together.
Tim Barnett, thank you very much indeed.
Great. Thanks a lot. Good to talk to you.
That was Hugh Young and Jim Waters in Wellington chatting with New Zealand Member of Parliament Tim Barnett.
Hi, this is Terence Stamp, Bernadette in The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, on This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio news magazine.
I think it's very important for our society to respect each individual, to welcome those with good hearts, to be a welcoming country.
I just think the most cruel thing that can happen is any government forcefully separating couples.
On Valentine's Day this year, New York's Gerald Nadler, for the third consecutive year, introduced the Permanent Partners Immigration Act, or PPIA, in the U.S. House of Representatives, where it currently has the bipartisan support of 116 co-sponsors. The bill was introduced for the first time in the U.S. Senate this week by Vermont's Patrick Leahy and five original co-sponsors. The PPIA would modify the Immigration and Nationality Act to provide same-gender partners of U.S. citizens and lawful permanent residents the same immigration benefits that legal spouses of U.S. residents and same-gender binational couples in Australia, Belgium, Canada, Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, Iceland, Israel, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, South Africa, Sweden, and the United Kingdom currently enjoy. In this report by Los Angeles correspondent Kathy Sanchez, some binationally coupled gays and lesbians, and board members of Immigration Equality, the local chapter of the U.S. National Lesbian and Gay Immigration Rights Task Force, discuss the challenges faced by gay, lesbian, and transgender immigrants, and how even post-9/11 immigrant detentions can be queer.
My partner's in Taiwan. I just got back earlier this week from spending 2 weeks with him, but right now, that's about all we can do a couple times a year is spend a few weeks together.
The setting is West Hollywood, and those gathered are members of Immigration Equality. The group is a chapter of the Lesbian and Gay Immigration Rights Task Force, a nationwide organization that's dedicated to fighting for equal rights for same-sex binational couples.
I have an international partner. We've been together for about 3 years, and it still isn't resolved of how we're going to be able to stay together, even with the difficulties of having a relationship with another individual. We have the added burden of staying together physically.
We found out about Immigration Equality in West Hollywood at the City Hall when they passed the resolution in support of the PPIA, and it was a revelation. It was so great to feel like there were other people in the same situation who didn't know what was going to happen in 6 months when the visa were up, or were here without a visa.
I have an international partner, and I fell in love with somebody that lives in a different country, and we are both together fighting for the rights of staying together, being gay and being free.
The Immigration and Naturalization Service, or INS, does not recognize same-sex couples. So unlike our heterosexual counterparts, we can't sponsor our immigrant spouses for permanent residency in the United States. This causes thousands of lesbian and gay binational couples to be kept apart or stay together illegally. There are many issues that complicate LGBT immigration. The LGBT community enjoys rights in California that other states don't offer, such as domestic partnership. Immigration Equality Board member Doug Haxel explains that domestic partnership can sometimes be detrimental.
It indicates that they're in a relationship with an intent to stay in the United States, and that could violate their visa, depending on what type of visa they have. Student visa, work visa, some of those you're not allowed to have an intent to stay. And to sign a domestic partnership is kind of like saying, hey, I have an intent to stay. So it's actually a serious issue.
Doug says people also fail to see the connection between special registration and the LGBT community. The countries that so far are required to register with the INS are not LGBT friendly. Doug says binational couples hit two walls, one with the INS and the other with their country of origin.
Many of the people who were detained, they had family members in Los Angeles who could try to get them out and go through the appropriate legal channels to help them. But there was a couple cases we know of where a gay man was detained, and he wasn't completely comfortable being out about his partnership anyway, and he wasn't fully comfortable addressing that issue, and he had no, because of the country he came from that has a culture that was somewhat hostile to homosexuality, he had nowhere to turn. The ethnic support groups for his home country were unsupportive. They didn't want to hear about gay and lesbian issues. And his partner was having to work quietly in the background. That was an extremely frightening situation for them. And, you know, if you're dealing with these issues of coming out and immigration, on, you know, all of these things together on top of then detention and special registration, I mean, it's just another burden that same-sex binational couples are going to have to go through to justify their existence. And it is yet another reason why we are so actively fighting for the Permanent Partners Immigration Act, because it would enable people to have a legal, valid partnership visa and be able to do away with this and be able to stay here legally.
As complicated as this can be for gay and lesbian couples, things get even stickier if you're transgender. The INS does not recognize post- or pre-operational transgender persons, nor does every state. Immigration Equality Board member Chris Hise explains that this lack of clarity had a detrimental effect on his application.
Under California law, I'm legally married to a U.S. citizen, my wife. In my case, the INS did not acknowledge this for federal purposes. We went in for the interview. They asked all the questions. They opened my medical exam. And here the officer reads, is a transsexual. He rushes out of the room. After a while, he comes back with a supervisor, who then asks us, says, so you're transsexual, then I only have two questions for you. How do you define transsexual, and do you have a penis? So she did not look at any of our stuff, anything we filed. I answered her questions honestly. And the response was, well, we're going to retain your file, and then we will decide if we forward it to our marriage fraud unit, or if we forward it to, they have some other unit, which obviously is something like a black hole.
Opponents of the bill argue that adding permanent partner to the Immigration and Nationality Act would leave the U.S. open to a flood of immigrants. Immigration Equality Board member Sophie Finelli says that argument is just plain nonsense.
Sometimes people talk about fraud as being an issue. You know, if we sign this PPIA, then everybody is going to be partners and we're going to have all these people moving in. Who would want to lie about being gay in America? It makes no sense, especially when you can get married in Vegas.
I'm Kathy Sanchez.
It affects me. My partner is Mexican, and I just think it's abominable, this country, this day and age, that, you know, 14 other countries around the world already accept it. And this is supposed to be the most forefront country in the world, and you can't even do this. It's like being in a glorified jail, prison. I just think it's abomination in the 21st century. That's all I have to say.
And finally this week, a benediction of sorts.
I am mindful that we're all sinners. I believe in the sanctity of marriage.
Thank God for a country that demands religious freedom. Thank God for a church on every corner when we need 'em. Thank God for the campaign speeches given from the altars. Thank God for the candidate who blesses his exalters.
Thank God for the neon crosses blazing in the dark.
Thank God for the manger scenes displayed on public parkland.
Thank God for the bullhorns when they amplify the preaching. Thank God for the court decisions based on sacred teaching.
Thank God for the oath of office sworn upon the Bible. Thank God for protecting his good name on threat of libel.
Thank God for the day we wrote, in God we trust, on our dollars.
Thank God for the airwaves overrun with Christian scholars.
Thank God for the blessing to be joined in matrimony. Thank God for so help me God before the testimony. Thank God for our justices when they condemn a sinner. Thank God for a Hebrew prayer before a White House dinner. For the promise of complete redemption. Thank God for the Holy Church's tax exemption. Thank God for the freedom to accept our fate. Thank God for the separation of church and state.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Fenceberry, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Jim Waters, and Hugh Young, and Kathy Sanchez contributed program material. Thanks also to J.D. Doyle. You heard him from Tom Wilson Weinberg's Get Used to It, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can also listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. And thanks to AlternaBid and the Stonewall Society, you can still bid on some terrific items in an online auction to benefit This Way Out. Look for the This Way Out auction area at AlternaBid.com. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WDFH Ossining, New York, KMUN Astoria, Oregon, 3OCR Colac, Victoria, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. We invite you to stay tuned.